Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the one and only show on the internet where myself, Dan Selke of winterscoming.net, and Daniel Roman of winterscoming.net talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, etc. Today, we come at you live with unbearable sadness. Daniel, why is that?
Because the state of the world, because the Winds of Winter isn't out, but mainly because Amazon Prime Video canceled its big sweeping epic fantasy series, The Wheel of Time, and we liked it. So we have been distraught ever since this news dropped. Very courageously, brave Amazon dropped it courageously at like 3 p.m. on a Friday before a holiday weekend, leaving us lots of time to stew with our feelings. But that's the main reason I'm sad. Why are you sad, Dan? What's new in your life?
That's it. Also, I lost a foot. I don't need to show you that. Oof, the rough. Wheel of Time got canceled on Friday, and we processed over the weekend. We would have, you know, we do the show every Wednesday at 2 p.m. CST. Yes. So we couldn't react immediately. But of course, we're going to give you a reaction. Our reactions generally are, that sucks. It really does suck.
Yeah.
That show was, I think, probably the best high fantasy series on TV at the moment. I think it was improving season after season. I think the fandom and the kind of activity around it was so robust and healthy and enthusiastic. I thought it was gaining momentum. I was really getting into it. And to be cut off at the end of the third season that ended on like four different unresolved threads, it just leaves a bad taste in one's mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. The original report for this that I think came via Deadline, maybe, was sources say it was, quote, financial in nature, aka they counted the beans didn't quite add up to the amount of beans they needed to keep making the show, which, you know, it's Amazon. We all know it's not like they couldn't have found a little more money if they wanted to, but they did say that season three was designed to provide some closure in case they couldn't continue, which, like,
complete nonsense.
Yeah, anyone who's seen it knows that's just not true. You know, I guess if we're gonna really, I was gonna try to look at the glass half full and be like, Rand he's accepted his destiny and he's now about to lead the Aiel, but like, it's not even remotely a satisfying conclusion for a show like this. And they only made it to 4 out of the 14 books. So obviously there are reasons for that.
Julie's comment. Maybe they ran out of money or needed it for more lip fillers. Perhaps Jeff Bezos putting lip fillers in there for all I know. I'm not sure. Look, obviously it's financial. There's decisions really aren't made for reasons other than that, generally speaking, in this industry. It's wasn't making the money they wanted it to, but also it's a victim kind of the shifting sands yes. of the TV business right now.
I think there was a
time when throwing tons of money at TV shows, even if it didn't give you an immediate return, was something that studios were willing to do, like before mm-hmm. COVID, after Game of Thrones, this heady period where the streamers were all in this mode of we're going to grow by any means necessary. And the point is growth, not profit. Then sure, get $500 million for the Rings of Power. Sure, order three seasons of time ahead of time. Sure, do this, do that. But it's 6 years later, 5 years later, and things have changed. Now COVID happened and it kind of disrupted things. The strikes happened, they disrupted things. Game of Thrones is further in the rearview mirror. High Fantasy isn't as much of a hot property as it was. So now they look at something like this show, The Wheel of Time, and they think maybe it's not worth it. The issue is vision. To yes. have the ability to make a whole huge, robust eight or whatever season show like The Wheel of Time would have needed to be to tell the complete story, it requires people on the executive level, like in the driver's seat the whole time, believing in it the whole time, fighting for it the whole time. And the fact of the matter is, at studios, especially at Amazon Studios recently, turnover happens. I think Jennifer Salk, the person who yep. kind of greenlit The Wheel of Time, got, either ousted. Canned or left. Yeah. Ousted. Let's go with ousted.
Ousted.
And then new people come in. Now, that makes for a pretty chaotic schedule, because one person green lights a show that's supposed to last for years and years. Another person comes in and is like, nah, we're done with that.
Yes.
So there's a lack of consistency. It's hard. Like, so many things have to line up just correctly. Obviously, if the show would have been a giant hit and was watched by kajillions of people, it would have gotten greenlit no matter who was in charge, probably. But the combination of executive turnover and the show being a normal sized hit, not a super hit, as Robert Harris says, a lot of fantasy folks talking about it. Although fantasy folks talking about it so enthusiastically, it was so catching and wonderful and nice, contributed to it. And it just blows, because it was a show I really liked. And it was a show being made at a level that kind of resembled the high fantasy boom times. And I wanted to keep that going because I was having a great time.
Yeah.
But, you know, everything fades. The universe degrades into entropy. Things fall apart. Electrons fall out of the orbit and we all become dust.
Yeah. I mean, it is definitely a tricky thing, because I you wrote an article about this, about is the, you know, this signaling the end of the high fantasy boom, and maybe we could say the epic fantasy boom, because I don't know that I would really call Game of Thrones high fantasy. There aren't elves and there are dragons, but you know, the magic.
Let's not get into a discussion about what exactly high fantasy means. We'll be here for hours.
The Wheel of Time is high fantasy. But I do think what you said about the TV landscape changing is very relevant here, because I kind of have no doubt that if this show was in this exact same situation 3 or 4 years ago, like it would have been greenlit for season four.
Totally.
I think there is no question about that. So I do think the shifting TV landscape, studios across the board are tightening their belts, mm-hmm. kind of. They're all looking for ways to cut costs. A lot of them are realizing, oh, we kind of ate the tech grift in terms of let's all start our own streaming service and how great that will be. We'll make so much money. And then realizing, oh shit, we don't actually have a long-term plan to make the money unless we turn them into cable on your streaming app, which is what they all now are doing with mm-hmm. ads. They're essentially replicating cable through the internet.
You have Amazon like syndicating The Rings of Power and Citadel, of all things, for like normal TV, which I don't think is a bad, like a terrible idea. I think The Wheel of Time would have been like a better candidate for that, because there's more episodes, but whatever. What do I know?
Yeah. Yeah, that is definitely a thing that they're doing now. And, you know, HBO did that with, they started with like Westworld and Raised by Wolves and whatever. And now Amazon's doing it with The Rings of Power and Citadel. That's another thing that makes this especially galling, is like, I don't want to be like, but we're getting more Rings of Power. But like, Citadel's even more egregious in terms of like what an expensive misstep that that show and that property was, because they Amazon just wanted a global series. Meanwhile, the Wheel of Time was kind of starting to capture a global audience because it's global by nature. They film all over the world. They have actors from all over the world. But yeah, it is definitely a sad thing. And I think what you said about the regime changes is fair. And I think it comes back to one of my big gripes, and I wrote about this at the start of the season when it was doing really well, was that Amazon is not a television studio. Like, yes, there's Amazon TV or whatever, there's Amazon Studios, but that's very different than something like HBO, where like their pedigree is making TV. It's their whole bread and butter. They're going to prioritize shows that are elevating their brand and get all their weight behind them. In a way, I don't think Amazon really does with its shows, because this is like a side hustle that the company does with its spare change. And I think Thrones, if I remember right, and I don't remember the exact deets of this, but I'm pretty sure it did have one of these regime changes like mid-run, where I forget the name of the executive who was one of the ones who greenlit Thrones, who then stepped back. Casey Bloys came more into the forefront. She's still the original one. She still serves as an executive producer on a lot of stuff, including The Last of Us, but her name evades me.
But they Forsey, is it?
No. But
okay, never mind. It's not important. Go on.
Thrones survived it because HBO was a TV studio that really knew how to make TV, and Amazon just isn't. So you get these tech company shifts where it's new people came in, we're going to can everything that came before. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Wheel of Time is unfortunately a casualty of that.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility, to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Now, okay, making a break for Arosa. Good to see you here. Might be her first time watching live. I'm sorry you were sick. Yeah, sorry you're feeling sick, but welcome. We do it every week. Good to see you. And as a couple of you are suggesting, like Diane, maybe some other channel will pick up the Wheel of Time. Is that possible, Dan?
Yeah, I'm glad that you asked, Dan. And that we're going to talk about this. Yeah, Robert Harris also said maybe Apple TV will pick it up. So this is essentially the question on a lot of fans' minds right now. There is a Save the Wheel of Time campaign that the folks over at WatchSeries.com have organized along with a bunch of other fans. If they have a petition, they have ways to sign open love letters to the cast and crew, to do videos to kind of support that effort. Yep. Producer Richard just put it in the chat, savewatt.com. So that effort is just getting started. I think the question of whether the Wheel of Time can be saved. So in terms of the legality of it, I think probably, right? Because the Wheel of Time rights are a murky, murky situation, because Sony, I believe, is the company that technically has the rights, which they purchased from this smaller company called iWatt Studios. Sony then contracted Amazon to produce the series. So Amazon is what I've heard who passed on making more, but Sony still has the rights to make more if they would like, presumably. I don't know how that exactly shakes out. So they could go shop it. And, you know, they posted like clips of Ruidian to their YouTube channel immediately after the cancellation was announced. It seems like it's not entirely out of the realm of possibility. They would shop it. Now, would another studio pick it up? I think that's a hard thing to, you know, we were just talking about our current moment in TV history and how all these companies are tightening their belts and stuff. You know, the United States is a giant mess right now with the president threatening tariffs on non-United States-based productions, which what does that even mean if it's like, you know, a show like The Wheel of Time that's bankrolled by U.S. companies, but films entirely elsewhere? Who even knows? I don't even think the people threatening these things know what that would mean for a show like The Wheel of Time. So I think it's not impossible, but the chances are much lower than, say, like when The Expanse got saved, ironically, by Amazon, because that was at the start of this post Game of Thrones boom. But it's a similar situation where it's a very cohesive, you know, production.
That's true.
That could just be taken elsewhere in theory. But I think time is kind of the element here, because people are going to get older, that huge cast and crew are going to disperse to other projects. What do you think, Dan?
I mean, I think it's possible, but I'm not counting on it. My instinct says no, although maybe I'll adopt that, and then I'll be delightfully surprised when Apple does pick it up. And Julie, we keep saying Apple, because it seems like they'd be, if anybody would do it, the most likely, since they have that great combination of A, tons of money, B, a seeming interest in a lot of nerdy stuff. They have a lot of sci-fi over there. They have no high fantasy series. Like, Netflix has The Witcher, HBO has House of the Dragon, Amazon has The Rings of Power. Apple doesn't really have anything. And I guess those three. They almost seem to be like operating on a place of like 5 years ago where they are throwing money at stuff. Netflix could too, said Stephen Maximer. I mean, Netflix can do anything it wants at the end of the day. Netflix is big enough to just throw money at anything.
But would I trust Netflix? Yeah, I feel like Netflix and Apple are kind of the two main ones. Like, I've seen people say HBO. I don't think that works for a few reasons. One, I don't know that this is completely I don't want to say adult enough, but they've already got big adult fantasy series in Westeros. I don't know that they really are going to be shopping for one so similar as The Wheel of Time. Also, they're about to dump absolute fistfuls of money at Harry Potter, so picking another expensive fantasy series wouldn't make any sense. I think that Netflix, you know, their big fantasy series, they have a bunch of big shows that are about to end. The Witcher will presumably be ending in the next 2 years, which I've seen some weird articles that are like, The Witcher canceled, that came out in the past week. The Witcher is not canceled.
There's some really weird news site that's posting a lot of really weird headlines. I've never heard of it before, but I saw it all over Google recently. They're all bizarre.
Yeah.
I'm not going to look them up.
Yeah.
Because I'm just not going to do it. But no. If you see them, don't go in there.
No,
what are they? You'll find out.
Yeah, The Witcher has not been canceled, never been canceled. It's going to the end of its run. Five seasons is the right amount. But it is ending. Stranger Things is ending. Squid Game is ending. So, like, it feels like Netflix could have room for something like this. Now, do they have the long-term appetite to run something like The Wheel of Time for another five seasons? I don't know about that. So the other thing I wanted to say about Apple is that they do seem to have a real interest one, they're good at picking their IPs. Like, they're doing Murderbot, they're doing Foundation. It seems like they're, you know, one of my big gripes with streaming services and TV studios is they all want like the next Lord of the Rings or the next Game of Thrones, but they don't have a very good grasp on these genres to pick the IPs that would be good to fill that void. So they end up with like, you know, the Golden Compass trying to fill the Game of Thrones void. And it's like, that's the thing that's aimed at children. Game of Thrones is aimed at adults. Like, there are things like that that I feel like Apple maybe has a little bit better of a grasp on.
Sure,
seems like there are some genuine nerdy people over there who like this stuff. The other
someone over there, I'm just sorry, just go to the quick list. I'll have it on the list of For All Mankind, Foundations, Murderbot, Severance. What nerds run that place?
Silo,
that's what.
Silo. So I think with Apple as well, they seem to have a real like long view with how they're developing these things. Like, if I would never have guessed back when For All Mankind was premiering, even though it's a good show, that it was going to run for like five seasons and a spinoff and still be going. Yeah. You know, Foundation is renewed for season three, even though it kind of got a lukewarm reception, it's still going. Silo is getting to finish its story. Severance got more episodes in season two than in season one, I believe. So it's like, it seems like they have a longer view, whereas a lot of other studios, like even HBO, seems to be really like buckling down for turbulent times ahead, like giving House of the Dragon less episodes, delaying A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, starting filming way late on The Last of Us season three, even though it should have been filming months ago, in my opinion. So yeah, I think Netflix and Apple probably are two best bets for this, but it is, like you said, it is, I don't know what my instinct's saying here. It's hard because the TV landscape has changed so much since The Wheel of Time first started airing.
No one knows anything and everyone's sad. But kudos to The Wheel of Time people, cast and crew, for making a really good show for three seasons, especially this last one. I'm sorry you were cut out just when you were really breaking the stratosphere, but that's really it.
Yeah.
See on the other side.
There's one other interesting comment I want to read here from Max Silva. Says, the rumors John from What Up, which What Up is a good Wheel of Time YouTube channel to check out. Mm-hmm. I assume most people watching this will know it, but if not, go find What Up, W-O-T Up. He heard rumors suggesting that Amazon wanted to renew the series and Sony was the party holding out. And others have heard rumors that Sony is trying to get out of television. So is it possible that Sony wanted to get bought out and played hardball and Amazon declined? If so, does that imply Sony felt confident another streamer would buy them out for more? Audio listeners, maybe. I'm grimacing. Who the hell knows? You know, that is boardroom talk and without some really solid sources talking real openly about it, your guess is as good as mine. But what we know is it's a big question. What will happen here? Arosa said Stars makes good shows too. Maybe. I mean, Stars is kind of stuck to its lane. You know, they're kind of still going. They've tended a little more toward like the historical dramas, I think, than straight fantasy. Like, most of their big ones, like Outlander or Black Sails or Spartacus, are still like set in the real world, as opposed to fantastical realms.
I think, but part of that is probably working with a little less money.
Yes, I think that's true. I think Stars is a little thriftier with their budget, which, like, I mean, it's obviously working for them because Outlander is getting to finish its run, eight seasons. It's getting a spinoff.
That's true.
Black Sails finished its run. Spartacus finished its run. You know, Stars, I think, supports its series pretty well. So, yeah, AMC is another one where it's like, would this be good on AMC? I don't know. Maybe. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. It's a huge question mark. And who knows?
As Max says, he takes heart that we don't think it's completely ludicrous. It's not completely ludicrous. I'd say it's a long shot. But look, shows do come back. Like, it does happen. Firefly, Lucifer, Arrested Development, it happens. So we'll just sit back and remember the good times and hope for the best times.
Yeah, totally. I think that's all we can do right now. That, and you know, if you want to get involved in any of this stuff, if you're listening, watching, savewatts.com is the place to go for that. And yeah, we'll see what happens. We will obviously have our ear to the ground because we like the Wheel of Time quite a lot. And it's sad to see what was essentially, in my opinion, like the most important fantasy adaptation following Game of Thrones get canned. Yeah. So unceremoniously, when it was finding its footing. Season 3 was really good. And of course, Amazon is still trying to court it for Emmy recognition after canceling it. Because
it'd be funny. It'd be funny, man, if it wins everything.
I don't know if funny is the word I would use, but yeah, I guess it would be. It would be
one of many words you could use.
Yes. Funny and galling by turns. So yeah, we'll see what happens with the Wheel of Time. We will miss it. I'm sure we will talk about it again because it was a really good show, with a really special cast and crew. I'd love it to see it get more of a run, but it is just a huge question mark. I'm still waiting for like Rafe Judkins or Rosamund Pike to say something, because those two and Yosha Stradowski are kind of like the big three who I was like, let's see what they say. And none of them have said anything. So yeah, we'll see what happens.
That is kind of curious. Yeah, I'm waiting for that too. In the meantime, a show that is going to get another season, albeit not for way too long, is The Last of Us, HBO's zombie apocalypse drama, trapped up its second season.
Wait a sec.
Okay.
We have another thing to talk about before then. I don't want to throw Richard
Speaking
off.
Speaking of HBO. It's okay.
I hate this. I hate this next show, so we don't need to talk about it. But it's not the children's fault, so I guess we should.
I'm glad you clarified that. Okay. Speaking of HBO and shows that are being made, as you said, they are pouring a ton of money into this Harry Potter show.
Yes.
It's just happening. I always thought it would.
You did.
Not under
You've been saying this for years.
Not under these circumstances, but I did think it would happen. And they announced who's going to be playing characters you know, even if you've never seen the movies or read the books. The Golden Trio, so-called. The three main characters. The young wizards and witch who will be at the center of potentially 8 seasons of this show. That is, from left to right, Arabella Stanton as Hermione Granger, the nerd. That's Dominic McLaughlin, pictured here without glasses, as Harry Potter, the chosen one. And that is Alistair Stout as Ron, the ginger. And these three kids are the center of the Harry Potter story. If most of them have probably read Harry Potter. They're the three bean people. They go to Hogwarts. They learn about magic. They fight Voldemort. It lasts for 8 years and then it's over.
Yeah.
I always thought there'd be a Harry Potter show. I was saying this before J.K. Rowling went crazy. I always thought they would do it sooner or later. And I expected sooner.
Yeah.
The vibes do seem a bit off for a few reasons. A, there's the J.K. Rowling is a rabid transphobe of it all, and it's just inseparable from the series.
Mm-hmm.
There is, I think, maybe a heightened awareness of the plights of child actors. I think when they announced this, a lot of the reactions were, oh, those poor kids. They're just going to get...
I literally said that.
put under the microscope. They're going to get tarred and feathered online. They're going to go through a ton of intense scrutiny that, you know, it's probably not the best for you to when you're a kid. All happened with the original three Harry Potter actors, and Rebecca Watson and Rupert Grint, but it was the first adaptation. We weren't talking about the subject as much. Look, I understand why they're making Harry Potter show, because they want money, and it's a very, 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 very popular property. I'm not saying it can't be good. I hope it will be good. I don't feel like I'm ready for it yet, because I'm old, and I remember when the movies came out, and I saw the movies when I was like a kid, and they're still in there, and I still don't feel like it's enough time. time has passed for me to really get excited about it. But
sure,
if there are younger people who are really into this idea now, I'm happy for them. Max, that would be beyond hilarious if someone came out as trans, one of the trans in the middle of the thing. We would see. I'm nervous about something like that happening. I'm nervous about the discourse around this show.
Yeah.
I'm interested, but there is a bit of a block. I don't hate it like you do. You seem to be dead set against, especially the kids and the show in general.
I am not dead set against the kids. I wish them nothing but the best. And I will say, like, not about hating on the children. It is not their fault. And I do think that this is part of what makes this more difficult here, is that, like you said, there's been on and off scrutiny about, like, the life of child actors and how that affects them for years. This is a particularly interesting situation because it's not just child actors. It's child actors being dropped into a particularly volatile and controversial production when they are so young that you know these children can't even fully internalize what this is going to do to their lives. And it's different than, like, you know, Daniel Radcliffe and the other two who were in the original movies. They were cast when Harry Potter's star was rising. You know, the movies ran concurrently with when Rowling was writing the books. So at that time, it was, you've been cast to play these roles in, like, the most popular children's fantasy series, arguably of all time, but definitely of right now. Here it is. You've been cast as the three leads in an extremely controversial children's fantasy that is coming under increased scrutiny in recent years, that is being rebooted ahead of its time because we have a corporate mandate to keep capitalizing on this property, not because there's any specific artistic reason to do it. It's also a kids fantasy series that is being run on an adult premium prestige television network, so the branding optics are just weird. Do you disagree with that? Because that's something that keeps boggling me.
It's like, yes, HBO had The Sopranos and The Wire and Game of Thrones, but, like, there's no reason. It also, like, HBO Max also has Sesame Street. Like, there's no reason HBO couldn't produce something that's made for all ages. Like, it can't exist alongside it.
No, but I think the difference here is this is going to be one of their flagships. So I think that's different than just, like, we have access to the Sesame Street library to say we are making this children's show one of our new tent poles. It strikes me as a similar sort of, like, brand confusion as when Discovery dumped a bunch of reality television onto HBO Max. It's not that it's necessarily wrong or bad. It's just trying to expand what they do to be for everyone. And I don't know if that's going to work for them or not.
I see your point. I guess it's the least of my concerns, but I see your point where the brain is a little bit off. I mean, it's more that, and I see Under Skyline saying that they're going to bring it more to life, and they are. I'm sure they're going to do a decent job. I kind of agree with you, though, where it's, again, I'm old. I'm old enough to remember the original movies.
Yeah.
And it did feel like we were all rising with them. Like, it was this story that was going to get its day in the sun and get the spotlight on it and become something the world will fall in love with. And it's much easier to feel excited about that story than it is to feel about, come line up and love the reboot of the thing that you already saw and enjoyed. It's just not as inspirational a story.
Totally.
But again, I'm sure it'll be good. And I hope the people who love it, love it. Maybe I'll enjoy it. I'm sure I'll enjoy it. It's hard for me to picture myself just loving it to death, though.
Yeah.
But you know what? We got a couple of years between now and then. I like John Lithgow.
Yeah,
I like that John Lithgow is playing an iconic British character. I feel like we need to get revenge on the island of Great Britain for taking all the American roles. So I like that. David Lewis and Abraham Lincoln, get off it.
That's fair. And you have been, like, to your credit, you have been saying this is coming, like, for years. You have been calling this. There will be a Harry Potter reboot. There will be one sooner rather than later. Like, I remember you saying that in, like, 2020, like years and years ago.
I have witnesses
of
even before that. Dude, I'm sorry. It's too much money on the table. There's no way it can. It's too much.
Yeah. So what, like, under Skyline and Leo are saying, like, the books have more detail. This is a chance to bring it all to life. You know, maybe they could film deleted chapters and stories from the book and cash in. Key point, and cash in. Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things that, like, I know they've made a big thing about this, that it'll be a more faithful version of the Harry Potter books adapted for television, but, like, I don't think the movies were that unfaithful. It's really, like they cut stuff, and, like, The Goblet of Fire, yes, it was the worst movie, and I think it's one of the best books, so mistakes were made. But, like, it's not like, it's so funny because we're talking about all these adaptations on this channel, and so many of them make wildly more deviation, like, yeah, choices than Harry Potter did, which was, like, you know, Harry gets to the Quidditch tournament in a slightly different way. He spends 3 days less in Hogsmeade Village. Like, you know, it's not like they totally changed things up that much in those movies.
Yeah. Selling it as a chance to make it faithful is a little weird. When
outrageous.
There wasn't really a problem with that. Not a serious problem anyway.
No, I don't think anyone, I have never once heard the argument, the movies are not good because they weren't faithful enough to the Harry Potter
you
book.
Know folk have made it, though. Like, let's not act like you wouldn't say that. It's not like the 1980s Dune movie, like, which had to, like, change everything to fit it into, like, 2 hours. Like, yes, you could say we need another version of this to make a kind of more full, respectful adaptation.
Yes.
I don't think you can plausibly look at the Harry Potter and say, like, oh, we need a new thing.
Yes.
Is it necessary to make something that kind of fills it out? But again, I really don't want to be that much big of a hater. It's always going to happen. It's fine. I'm sure the discourse will be popping and we'll be on it.
I will be a big enough hater for the both of us, Dan, but not of the children, because it's not their fault. Anyway, do we want to move on from this? I feel like we could probably do a whole episode talking about our hate, but not that much hate, but also some hate for Harry Potter and our complicated
for yourself, man. Complicated, I extricate feelings myself from Daniel Roman's hate.
Okay, that's fair. I've just anyway. And yes, Max Silva says, isn't that last battle chapter from the Wheel of Time longer by itself than the entire first Harry Potter book? I believe that's true. Yeah, it's like a 250 page chapter, because Brandon Sanderson, you know, he's going to do something like that. All right, moving on. Before I so rudely interrupted you to talk about the show that will not be named, you were about to talk about a show that is getting a third season, another season
for quite a while, which I think is an important point to make. I feel like that is affecting my enjoyment a bit. The Last of Us, HBO's big zombie apocalypse drama, disrupted second season this past Sunday, and it was pretty good. Once again, I did have a bit of a block. I'm not sure quite where it came from. This is based on a very popular video game. Bella Ramsey as Ellie goes to Seattle to kill a woman named Abby for killing her father named Pedro Pascal. And she almost succeeds. She kills some people. And then the season ends with a cliffhanger with Abby confronting Ellie, drawing a gun, cutting to black. And then we go 3 days back in the past to, in the next season, see what she was up to right there on the screen during the same time as Ellie was hunting her in season two. That's what happens in the games. They're sticking very close to the structure, and I liked it. I liked some parts of the season very, very much. I loved the flashback episode with Joel. I loved, like, the thing to their kind of the panorama of their lives. So that was very effective. Joel's death was really good. I liked some stuff in Seattle. I gotta say, I think the knowledge that it's probably going to be 2 years for another season is making me not as high on this finale as I otherwise would be.
Yeah.
I think if you end it with some tune in next time to see what happens next kind of resolution, rather than putting a real button on the story, how long do you have to wait to see what happens next becomes very relevant. And the fact that they're not getting a move on has me a little bummed. We're probably looking at 2027, and that's a long time to wait. I could be dead by then.
Yeah. Well, I hope not.
My 30s, man. TikTok.
It's true. Time is not on our side here, or The Last of Us's side. I do think, it is. I completely agree with what you're saying about the timing being probably one of the biggest chilling factors and like my enthusiasm for this season. I enjoyed a lot of stuff about this season. I really liked Caitlin Dever as Abby.
Yeah. I mean, she's only like 3 episodes, but she was good.
Yeah, she was good. It was obviously whenever Joel was on, he was great. Bella Ramsey did a good job as Ellie. I liked the goofiness of Bella Ramsey's performance more than the monstrous side. I never quite bought that as well with her as I felt like I wanted to.
I bought it a lot in the scene where she beats Nora to death with a pipe. I really bought it there. And part of the reason I was kind of agreeing with Julie that, I don't know, something I couldn't quite figure out, it didn't quite work as well for me this season, was in the finale, they kind of pulled back from that. Like they had her sort of accidentally kind of a House of the Dragon-y thing where they're kind of, why do all these writers want to like blunt their characters' morally ambiguous decisions and kind of sand the edges off so it's not totally their fault? I really wish they would just go whole hog. You're on HBO. Like, you're on The Sopranos. You're on Game of Thrones. You're on The Wire. You can have characters who do horrible things, and we just follow them anyway. It's okay. Like, I feel this fear. I also felt in House of the Dragon where they're afraid we won't like them.
Yeah.
But I will like them more if they're just themselves and like uncompromising. This wasn't as bad as House of the Dragon. It was fine. It worked. And it was an effective scene, but I really liked Bella Ramsey. This is going to sound weird. I really liked Bella Ramsey when she was beating Nora to death with a pipe. And I know she can do it. So I wish they would have pushed that angle rather than kind of made her more regretful.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think that the Nora scene is one of the peaks for Ellie of this whole season. And I am going to spoil things a little bit here from the game. Just a little bit. So like just the tiniest bit past what we've seen, which is that Ellie, you know, obviously we will see more of Ellie in this show. It kind of ends on a cliffhanger of like, did she get shot? We'll see her again. So in the game, that scene you're talking about with the regretful accidentally shooting Mel and then finding out she's pregnant. I don't remember if shooting Mel is an accident. I don't think it is. I think Ellie made that choice.
It's not. I mean, Mel attacks her and then Ellie stabs Mel in the neck with a knife.
Yeah.
So, which is very different from shoot through a guy and just accidentally hit her.
Yeah. And right before that, Ellie stabs Mel's dog to death in the game. So there are all these things. The game commits so hard to Ellie is doing awful, awful shit. And you're not going to realize it until she's already so deep into it that you're like, oh my God, what is she? What am I watching her do? The game, it's a game. So it's like, what am I doing? When we next see Ellie in the game after this scene we've just seen, she, the game flips things in such an interesting way that she is terrifying. It's like she is a bayou person villain who is the stuff of nightmares in the scene immediately following what we see in this finale. And I don't think the show has set that up to pay it off because of what you just said, backpedaling in the finale to kind of make her more sympathetic, make it so she's not quite as monstrous as she needs to be. I have conflicted feelings. I think if this was, so there's that side of it. There's also this is part one of two or three or whatever. And having the only way that could have worked well for me is if it's a short gap between them, because it's telling just a fully incomplete.
It will be not. I would be fine even with a year, maybe. Like if they had a year, I'd do other stuff. It's fine. 2 years is asking a lot of me.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And I also, you know, early this season, you didn't like the hard home battle at Jackson Hole.
I did not like it. I just questioned whether it was really needed.
And I, at the time, I was like, I liked that scene. I liked what it did for Tommy, even though it really changes Tommy's character, because in the game, mm-hmm. Tommy goes to Seattle and Ellie goes after him, versus in the show, Ellie goes to Seattle and Tommy goes after her. But I did find myself thinking about this after the finale has aired, if we should have had that Jackson battle, because it feels a little like there's this big, massive stuff at Jackson in the early episodes, and then they speed run Ellie's game storyline for the four episodes following that. I think that we needed a little more time to breathe with Ellie and Dina in Seattle. Like, there are a lot of scenes that the show cut from the video game while Ellie and Dina are in that city. And if they were only going to do seven episodes, right, it's kind of like, could they have stretched that out into eight or nine by just giving us a little more time with them in that city, exploring what's going on with the WLF and the Seraphites and whatever else? I think probably. So it feels a little like they put this huge battle at the beginning, they speed ran the back half of the season, and then they ended it after seven episodes, and now we have to wait 2 years. So, yeah. My biggest problems with The Last of Us are not things that were on screen. They were choices that the production as a whole made, I think.
None of it was bad. I agree with Julie, though. I liked it, but yeah, I didn't like much of the first. There was something a little off, and I think we got into it. I've been saying this for a while. Okay, the camera. Hollywood producers, I know you watch this show. I know you all do. I've been told. I have my sources. Just my main thing is, let your characters be awful. Let them be disgusting. Let them be depraved. Let them be horrible. And we will follow them if they're compelling. It's all I want. It's all I care about. I want to see less, especially in HBO of all places, of this sanding the edges off. Let them be bad and complicated. Yeah. And I'll love it. That's where I am. I'll watch it when it comes back. But man, it's going to be a long wait. And HBO needs to fix that. They need to find some way to make these things faster. House of the Dragon, The Last of Us, The White Lotus can, I guess, take some time off because they're always new every season.
Yeah, but, it's kind of an anthology. Ones,
come on, speed this up. You're going to lose people, man.
Yeah.
Mark my words. And I'm sorry I was losing audio. Hopefully it's just you. All right, Daniel, while we try and get that up and running, are you watching anything? What are you watching, if anything? Everyone out there, what are you watching or reading? What do you want to share about?
Yeah, I've been watching some stuff. I've been reading some stuff. So I'm watching The Murderbot Show on Apple TV Plus. It remains pretty fun. I have seen the whole season, but I'm rewatching it now as it's airing. Cool. Enjoying it a lot. It's kind of a light sci-fi comedy. I feel like it's nice to see something that's different. I really like Alexander Skarsgård in the role. It's very faithful to the Murderbot book while expanding on a whole bunch of stuff. Dan, you've been watching it too, right? What do you think of it so far?
I have, but we have to read this super chat. Dragonheart613 just paid us $5 to read this comment. Thank you. Wheel of Time gets better each season, but canceled. Rings of Power gets worse and loses more viewers each season, but renewed. Amazon has truly lost it. I mean, essentially, I agree. I think Wheel of Time did get better each season. I think Rings of Power, I don't think it got worse. I think it stayed about the same level of whatever. But if I had to choose which of those shows to continue, it definitely would have been Wheel of Time.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dragonheart613, for your very insightful, very well-written, wonderful, and lucrative comment.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for tuning in. I wonder if there's, I read something about this and I didn't get the exact details, that Amazon might be like obligated to make more seasons of Rings of Power. Like, they bought a 5-season order when they got the rights. So I don't know if they can easily cancel the Rings of Power the way they might be able to with the Wheel of Time. Because the Tolkien estate is like famously, I don't want to say difficult, but picky. They're choosy about what rights they give out. So yeah. Anyway, I'm watching Murderbot. I'm enjoying it. Did you have anything you wanted to say about it?
I'm watching it. It's nice. I like it.
Yeah.
Again, I still like the last time. It is. It's lighter than I thought it would be. I thought it would be a little edgier, a little more like kind of, I don't know, black comedy, like kind of ironic stuff under there. And it's good. I enjoy it. I'm loving The Studio on Apple TV Plus. That show is so good. That show is so made for me. That show is so full of dorky ass film references. I'm like, ooh, 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 ooh. That show is stuff with jokes. That show is good performances. That show does tricks. I just watched an episode where the entire thing was one 36 minute uninterrupted take, which they were doing kind of for fun to like make fun of long takes. It's
nice.
Meta. It's direct. It's funny. It's got great actors. Catherine O'Hara's in it. Seth Rogen's in it. Catherine Hahn's in it. It's great. That show's great. I want to watch more of that show. And I'm going to tonight.
That's on Apple, right?
Yeah.
Nice. I need to watch that. I've heard nothing but good things. My partner watched the first episode and told me about the Kool-Aid bit with Francis Coppola, I think.
They have Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's involved in a plot to direct a Kool-Aid movie. Going to be their Barbie. Dragonheart 613 asked, do you guys think another streamer will pick up the Wheel of Time? We talked about this a little while ago, Dragonheart, and our basic conclusions is maybe.
Yeah.
I tend to doubt it, but if anybody does it, it'll be Apple or Netflix.
Yeah.
And if they do it, it will probably have to be in the nearish future.
Yeah,
I certainly hope so.
Yeah, we hope so. You know, I'm sure Dragonheart, you know about savewatt.com. Go visit that to see the campaign for this. But we talked about this a lot at the start of the show, and we hope so, but it's hard to say with the state of television being what it is right now. But yeah, so The Studio, I need to watch that. Haven't started that yet. Murderbot,
I really like it. Just
nice. No, that's legit. I'm glad you're enjoying it so much. That endorsement makes me feel like I need to watch it more. And yeah, Murderbot, not a heavy show whatsoever.
No fun.
Yeah, a fun show. I'm also reading this book I started this week called The Two Lies of Faven Scythe. It is a sci-fi pirate book. It's reflecting in my window by Megan E. O'Keefe, who wrote the Devoured Worlds trilogy. And it's fun so far. I'm just at the beginning, so pirates coming into contact with these goddess-like navigators who can weave paths between the stars, and one of them wants to go to this derelict space graveyard to find out what secrets there, and the pirates is being a scoundrel and doesn't want to go. So I'm enjoying it. I need to read more. The other thing that I've been watching that I wanted to talk to you about, because I can't remember if you watched it, I think you might have, Dark Winds. I started Dark Winds this week.
I haven't watched it. I hear it's great.
It's awesome. Yeah, I honestly went in expecting it to be decent and have been pleasantly surprised that it's just been better than I thought it was going to be. It's about these two Navajo police officers, on the reservation police officers in, I believe, New Mexico, Joe Leaphorn and Jim Chee. It's based on this very famous series of books, Leaphorn and Chee by Tony Hillerman. And it's like a crime procedural, but like Native American police officers. And it is really good. Like, they're doing a really good job of spinning out the mystery without, like, you know, stringing you along where it's like, we're going to leave the same question the whole time. Like, they're answering questions while giving you new questions. And it's got a really, really good cast, especially Zahn McLaren, I believe his name is. He was in Westworld. He's playing Leaphorn, and it's like a career role for him. Like, you know, like, it's awesome to see that dude leading a show because he's so good. So yeah, Dark Winds has been great.
I definitely recommend things. As for Julie, she's watching and enjoying The Walking Dead Dead Sea, which I do hear is pretty fun.
Nice.
And Leo's watching Duster, which I've considered watching that too. There's a lot of TV, man. And we're what's that?
That's Sawyer from Lost News show, right?
I don't know, but I know it's about J.J. Abrams, and I know it's set in the 70s, and I know Duster is a long jacket. Squid Game's coming around the corner. The Sandman's coming this year. The Witcher. A little other things. A lot is about to come to the pike. Stranger Things is coming back this year. A lot to cover.
Yeah, totally. One thing that's not coming this year, here's my segue here, is the Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. Do you want to say anything about, so right before we came on this show, George R. R. Martin, our dear author of A Song of Ice and Fire, whom we love very much, took to his blog and posted a fairly like bitter post about so he has a new movie coming out, A Dozen Dirty Jobs, which is based on a...
He's like starting to make it, yeah.
He's starting to make it. He's not writing it. He's just producing it. It's based on a story by Howard Waldrop, who is his first...
Late friend.
His late friend, who is one of his oldest friends in the science fiction community. And they're making it with the Blue Eye Samurai, the studio that did Blue Eye Samurai. Mm-hmm. And Martin, do you want to talk about this at all? I
want to talk about Dark Winds in the voice, and I want to make this my masterwork of George R. R. Martin impression. Jesus. Rate.
Okay.
So George R. R. Martin wrote this just today, talking about this new movie. He's probably like, he tends to like just lend his name to these things to help get them off the ground. I really don't think he's distracted overly with this stuff. But in this post, he spent way more time sort of, well, I'll just read it and then you can decide. All right, here we go. I know. Some of you will just be pissed off by this, as you are by everything I announce here that is not about Westeros or the Winds of Winter. You have given up on me or on the book. I will never finish Winds. If I do, I will never finish A Dream of Spring. If I do, it won't be any good. I ought to get some other writer to pitch hit for me. I'm going to die soon anyway, because I am so old. I lost all interest in A Song of Ice and Fire decades ago. I don't give a shit about writing any longer. I just sit around and spend my money. I edit the wild card books, too, but you hate wild cards. You may hate everything else I have ever written. The Hugo winners and Hugo losers. A Song for Laia and Dying of the Light. Sand Kings and Beauty and the Beast. This Tower of Ashes and The Stone City. Old Mars and Old Venus and Rogues and Warriors and Dangerous Women and all the other anthologies I edit with my friend Gardner Dozies. You don't cover any of them. I know. You don't cover anything but The Winds of Winter. You told me so often enough. Thing is, I do care about them. And I care about Westeros and Winds as well. The Starks and Lannisters and Targaryens, Tyrion and Asha, Dany and Daenerys, the dragons and the direwolves. I care about them all more than you can ever imagine. So does George R. R. Martin going on a weird, full of marbles, going on a pretty... George R. Martin just likes to write. I think he's just a born writer. He enjoys being verbose. He does this. I don't think I need to read anything into it. I think it's pretty funny.
Yeah,
I do think it shows that maybe he spent more time than is likely healthy absorbing all the nasty things that are said about him online. I think he is an online kind of guy. I'd recommend logging off and just living life offline. It might be impossible for someone like him. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that George R. R. Martin is maybe a chronically online person as a lot of us younger peeps are, but anytime, I mean, he's had comments turned off on his blog on and off for many, many years, because anytime he posted anything, he would get those sorts of comments of, where's Winds of Winter? We don't care anymore. You know, exactly. Yeah. This definitely feels like him venting. I think you're right. I don't know that we need to read too hard into it. I think it's pretty understandable. I think it's pretty sad because, you know, we all love these books and have essentially driven the author responsible for writing them or trying to write through the rest of them to such a bitter place that he's posting stuff like this online. Like you can't, it's hard to imagine what it must feel like to be this dude. Like I imagine it's not easy. But yeah, so he needed to get it out, I guess. Last year it was HBO's turn. Now it's the fans.
I'm in favor of it. I hope he keeps writing exactly what he thinks and feels. He had a good interview with Joe Abercrombie, and it's entertaining. He says a lot of cool stuff. They trade some barbs. Yeah. He is verbose and articulate and not afraid to speak his mind, and I'm all for it.
Yeah.
All right. Why don't we get into quickly the WIC News lightning round? We go over a bunch of stories we couldn't get to the main body of the show and give our 20-second opinions on them, no more, no less, lest we be buzzed.
Let's do it. Let's do it. These are not in any particular order. So, Dan, why don't you ask me first?
Yeah.
Because I imagine you don't care at all about the Avatar movie.
I could talk about it, but yes.
For 20 seconds.
Daniel, Avatar, The Way of Water, is going to come back to movie theaters on October 3rd. You're going to go see it again on the IMAX?
Possibly. Maybe. Maybe not. Who knows? I do firmly support this, though, because of all the movies that I've seen in recent years, Avatar is one of those movies that's just not the same at home. Like, it is made to be watched in a theater. So, yeah, it's coming back to theaters October 3rd ahead of the release of the third one. Obviously, if you like Avatar, go see it. All right. We were just talking about this, but surely you have 20 more seconds worth of opinions you could share. Uninterrupted and unimpeded. So George R. Martin, he's producing an animated movie based on A Dozen Tough Jobs, which is a story by Howard Waldrop about the 12 labors of Hercules, but it's in the 1920s in Mississippi.
Yeah, I mean, again, I really don't think Martin putting his name on these movies means he's dedicating real time to them. I think he puts his name on them, so there's a celebrity name on them, so it helps them get over the track line of hurdles you have to get over in Hollywood to get anything done. I think that's what's happening. Also, it sounds neat. Sure, why not? It's really quite sweet, but okay. We're done with that. Daniel. Oh, this one's pretty big. Alex Garland, the director behind Annihilation, Ex Machina, Civil War, will direct an Elden Ring movie for A24.
That's pretty exciting. I liked Elden Ring. You liked Elden Ring. Also, co-created by George R. R. Martin. That seems like a really good creative pairing. Garland, A24. I am a little nervous about what an Elden Ring movie looks like because the game has this very abstract style of storytelling. It's early days. We'll see. All right, Dan, the next two Avengers movies, that's Avengers Doomsday and Avengers Secret Wars, Secret War, singular, plural, come at me, Marvel fans.
Wars?
Secret War. I think it's a singular war.
Okay, whatever.
Anyway, there's just one movie about it. The next two Avengers movies, they've been delayed to the holiday seasons for 2026 and 2027.
Yeah, from like a spring to winter. I think that's fine. I'm sure people can wait. I imagine there'll be more Marvel stuff between now and then to keep people entertained. So I'm sure we won't be too bereft. They're not good at letting us go too long without one of those. Victor, it's not that Martin can overcome hurdles. It's that I think studios just, if they see a name on there, like that they know, they're more apt to pass it through to the next person.
What is this? What is this?
I had 5 seconds left.
Okay. All right. Hey, Daniel, ask me this thing I know nothing about.
Sure. The Handmaid's Tale, with I know that somebody watched, ended yesterday after 6 seasons.
Yeah. You know, went way beyond the books. It's definite, or the book singular. It's definitely a testament to how popular this series was, but it is at an end. Probably was time for it to come to an end, but there will be a spinoff based on, I believe it's The Testaments, which is another book by Margaret Atwood set in the same world. So, if you want more Handmaid's Tale, there will be more eventually.
Yeah.
All right. Dan, what's the deal with this? Oh, wait. Man, we should ask you the next two in a row. The next two in a row have to be for you, Dan. So this one, Ryan Reynolds, apparently he once pitched an R-rated Star Wars project to Disney. What's the deal there?
Why is this for me? Ryan Reynolds pitched an R-rated Star Wars to Disney. Sure. Maybe he pitched a story about a brothel on Tatooine. I have no idea what he pitched. Super violent Jedis. What if the lightsabers, when they hit you, blood goes everywhere? I'm not sure what he pitched. You know, after Andor, which was pretty mature, they could probably get away with something, an R-rated thing. But I don't think it'll happen.
Let me ask you this one. This is the one I was like, this has to be for him. Because
why don't I ask you the pictureless one next? I don't want to break off the rhythm. It would offend my sensibilities.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Daniel.
I'm super fine with that.
David Tennant wanted to play Mr. Fantastic in the Fantastic Four First Steps, but Marvel went with Pedro Pascal instead. Good idea? Bad idea?
Yeah, I think probably a good idea. I mean, I don't know that David Tennant's a better choice than Pedro Pascal for Mr. Fantastic. I would watch either of them, though. So Tennant explained this at a Comic-Con. He was basically asked who would he want to play in Marvel, and he said that's the character he would want to play. But alas, it'll be a long time before they ever need to recast Mr. Fantastic. So, sorry. Pedro's who we got. We'll have to settle for Pedro. How will we ever live? All right, and Dan, so The Sandman is coming out in two blocks on July 3rd and July 24th. Producer Richard says we don't have a picture for this one, so you just have to vamp about The Sandman, Dan.
Yeah, but Jack Gleason, Joffrey Baratheon, is in it as the cherubic Puck from Midsummer Night's Dream. That'll be fun. You know, it looks interesting. I love the producers spinning in the public. Like, we thought it was just the best thing creatively to end it with a season 2. Like, no, you didn't. You can just say it's money. No one believes it. It's fine. We all get it. I'll watch it, though. I liked the first season. Anyway, that is our show. Bit of a fun, chaotic one. Thank you very much for watching. As always, you can see all these archive episodes on our YouTube page, winteriscoming.net. We also do live episodes there and on our Facebook page, winteriscoming.net, every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, 3 on the East Coast, noon on the West Coast, and 1 up high in the mountains. Thanks a lot for watching. You've been lovely. We've loved having you here. Come back next time. Subscribe, like, tell your friends and family, and goodbye.
Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.